Hello and welcome to this week's Golf Shake podcast. We're a little bit late this week. Me and Matt have got a few confessions to make. Well, we've just been tired. I've been busy at work. There's been lots going on at Howley Hall Golf Club. Matt's been gallivanting away playing golf yet again, this time up in the northeast of England. But we've got lots and lots to talk about. Matt, how the heck are you?
I'm absolutely loving the sick remix, as my kids would say, that you've put on the podcast intro there.
It's a little bit loud, I think, but never mind. I've got a loud voice as well, so it'll go a bit.
Yeah, that keeps people on their toes, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah,
yeah, no, I'm good. I'm really good, actually. I've had a really good week. Played golf 5 days in a row, which...
Okay. That is one heck of a week, let me tell you.
Yep. And then went back to work for 2 days, and I'm off again to play tomorrow 36 holes by the seaside.
Beautiful. Where are you playing?
Tomorrow I'm playing at Hunstanton.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm really excited about because I've never been before. I've been to the course. I went up there and watched a bit of the English Ladies Amateur, I think, was there a couple of years back.
Okay.
So I've walked a bit of the course and had a look. And I've been up there once before just to have a little walk around and have a look while I was working up that way. But it'll be my first time playing. So I've got 36 holes. So I'm off at 8:20. Which means a 5 a.m. alarm for me tomorrow morning, but that is no problem when it's for golf.
Yeah, exactly. And there's the only thing that can get you up at that time of day that you're actually excited about.
Exactly.
I'd go so far as to say, even going on holiday, you're not as excited as when you go play golf at that time.
No, and I'm looking at the weather forecast, and it's bright sunshine, 21 degrees, little bit of a sea breeze. You literally couldn't ask for much more.
Ideal.
And it's so it's a 36 hole scratch open. Time to go low, hold some putts, make some birdies. Let's have it.
Why not? I mean, the good thing about us being a little bit late this week has meant that the golf's already started. Yeah, so BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, round one is complete. Marcus Helikilder with a wonderful 64 leads the way on 8 under par. There's been lots going on social media the last few days with. Obviously, the Pro-Am yesterday, which normally gets decent coverage on social media, more for the celebrity kind of interest there. So the likes of Gareth Bale playing yesterday. Spider-Man was there. What a guy. Tom Holland. Did you see any of this? Did you kind of look at any of the stuff that was on Instagram and Facebook, etc. yesterday or not?
No, I'll be honest. The Pro-Am does absolutely nothing for me whatsoever.
I'd love to play it.
Don't get me wrong. If I was offered the chance of playing it, I wouldn't turn it down.
Gaz Beadle, friend of mine, went and played in it, and they actually won in the afternoon. He played with Tyrrell Hatton.
Cool.
They got a nice little trophy.
Nice.
It was him. He played with Theo Walcott and Ben Foster as well.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, look good. And old Arsenal legend, Matt, so you'll love him. Man United. Boo.
Yeah.
Wrexham, though, now he's redeemed himself a little bit.
No, he's retired. He's retired.
Yeah.
One of my mates, old Golf Shake user, someone that used to come to the Golf Shake events, Dan, he actually won a competition years ago with FootJoy and Titleist to play in the Pro-Am.
Oh, wow.
And he played with Peter Uihlein.
Oh, cool.
And he said, it was like hitting balls on the range next to like Alan Shearer and Teddy Sheringham, all that sort of stuff. It was, probably the best day of his life. They just go a bit OTT for me. In fact, I saw enough of Gareth Bale yesterday. I'm not, I don't get the love in for the guy. I know it's good
for all of them. You're an Arsenal fan.
No, it's not, because I feel the same with Bill Murray. I feel the same with,
Tottenham.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's nothing to do with the fact that he played for Spurs. It's just not for me, the Pro-Am. I just don't, I don't like the... Gareth Bale's an exception, I think, but a lot of these celebrities that go and play, they play golf once a year and it's at this event, and I just think it takes away from...
I'm just jealous because I want to play it myself, but I do think the whole kind of amount of influencers and things like that just get dragged out for these things is a little bit painful to watch sometimes, but, as a person in the crowd, it'd be great to see the likes of, for me, I like Gareth Bale, and I saw John Terry was there as well. And just a chance to get up close to these people and have a chat. And like I say, Spider-Man, what more do you want? Spider-Man was there. It was pretty cool. But I mean, yeah, some good golf on show. I think Gaz had an awesome time. There's a video coming out on his channel that he's filmed that looks like it's going to be awesome. I was with Tom today doing some videos at Howley. He's been down there with him for the last few days, filming various different things that I've been doing. But he filmed everything yesterday at Wentworth, so that should be quite a good video to watch, and certainly one that I will watch, definitely. But, yeah, back to the real golf, and what I think is absolutely fantastic, literally every single member of the Ryder Cup team's teeing up at Wentworth, which is awesome.
Yes, we've mixed results in day one.
I'm not really sure it means that much.
No, I don't think it does. I think it's a shame that the storyline is, you know, Adrian Meronk's played well and Højgaard hasn't played well.
I hadn't really read that much into that, to be honest. But Meronk's always going to play well because he's really good.
Yes. Yeah, no, you know, I'm actually pleased for the guy.
I'd like to see him win. I really would.
I would. Great to see him win. Yeah. I would love it.
Looking on there, for me, it was great to see Marcus Armitage put a score together. So 69, he's tied 21st at the moment, which is great for him. I hope he can do it again tomorrow. If he can shoot that score again tomorrow, I guess he'll probably move up a couple of places, but he's almost guaranteed to make some decent money then. And he needs every single euro that he can get at the moment. So, yeah, really good first round for him. Hope he can build on it and hope he can... to be honest, I hope he can finish top 10, because I think that would guarantee him his card for next year and his money worries would be over for a year. So, hopefully. Daniel Gavin's not quite so good today. So he finished 3 over, unfortunately. But tomorrow is another day. It's looking like at the minute... it looks like the cut would be around level.
I think that'll go up to...
Yeah.
I think that might go up to one under.
Maybe. I think potentially one under is your... I think you might even have to be two under. So Dan needs a low one tomorrow, to be fair. So we'll see. But no, some good scores, some bad scores. Rory, level par, he'll be disappointed with that. I mean, it's never a bad score around with level par, but... when that drops you into 65th position, that's not good enough for Rory.
No.
I'm sure he'd want to be higher than that. But again, I don't think, not that this tournament doesn't really mean much to these guys, but it's more just keeping the competitive juices flowing, ready for a couple of weeks' time, isn't it, really? And do you know what I was disappointed to see is none of the Americans have come and played in it, because I just think none of them have played competitively since the FedEx finished. And for me, that I'd want to keep playing tour level golf. Do you know what I mean?
They've been over to Rome now, haven't they?
Yeah, well, not all of them though, have they? When I saw it, was a few players not there?
I think that's generally the case. I think it's quite hard to get 12 players and 12 caddies and captains kind of all together at the same time.
Quite a cup, mate. Shouldn't be.
Well, I understand it's a Ryder Cup, but it's also just off the back of the FedEx. I know these guys might need family time, holiday time. In Justin Thomas's case, he needs to be hitting balls, not traveling around the world.
Well, maybe. Maybe the same could be said for Spieth, potentially. I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm sure they're not, I'm sure they'll all get over at some point. You'd like to think, from their perspective, they would. Yeah, I can't see why they wouldn't. But yeah, just not all at once, I would have thought.
I don't know. I'm maybe reading more into it than there's there, but I don't know. The more I've gone full circle here, where I thought probably 2 months ago, before the teams were picked, I thought we were going to get an absolute pasting. And now the closer we get to it, the more I think we're going to give them a pasting. So yeah, I don't know. I think we're in a good place, really. And
absolutely. And actually, I know we mentioned Rory was level par, but Fitzpatrick seems to have found a real run of form. He's two shots back, tied for second. Ludvig Åberg's a couple of shots back. Tyrrell Hatton's played well today, shot 4 under. Victor Hovland's 3 under. Tommy Fleetwood's 3 under. Shane Lowry's 3 under. So yeah, it's not all. Sepp Straka's a couple under. Yeah, it's not all not all doom and gloom. It's looking good.
Yeah, I think on paper now, like when I look at it, our kind of top 6, 7, maybe 8 players are better than theirs. Whether the bottom end is questionable, but we'll see. We'll see. But Ryder Cup's a whole different thing, isn't it? You know,
it is. We've absolutely
seen people's games completely transform for the better and worse playing in Ryder Cup. So you just never know what's going to happen, particularly the rookies that we have. You never know how they're going to perform. But I've just got a feeling that we've got too much for them, really. And I think if it goes on form, which it doesn't generally go on form, if it does go on form, I think they're in trouble.
I always think that's the case anyway. I always think Europe are just much better at coming together as a team, especially on a home Ryder Cup.
I just think the way that all of them are playing as well is better.
Yeah,
I think with the exception of Scheffler and maybe Schauffele and Koepka maybe, although he hasn't played amazing towards the end, I think there's still the top 6, 7, 8 players we have are performing better than them. So we'll see.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's a big one. But before that, we've got the Solheim next week, mate.
I mean,
that is going to be a battering. I'm putting this out there right now. We are going to give them a good hiding, I think. So, yeah,
I absolutely agree.
And the girls, I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing week. We've got such a strong team. There's not a single player on there that I'd want to play against. They're just not only very talented golfers, but gritty competitors as well. And that, you know, often counts for a lot when you play a match play. It's almost the never give up kind of attitude that kind of sees you through and can get you points or half points when you're looking like losing them and things like that. So yeah, it's a big one. But yeah, we're going to go more in depth with it probably next week when we do the podcast after the tournament that Wentworth's finished. But for the next 2 weeks, the golf's, well, next 3 weeks, including this week, golf's just immense, isn't it? It's literally the pinnacle of some people's careers coming up, and we're going to be along for the ride. So yeah, I can't wait.
Me too.
Are you doing anything special for the Ryder Cup or the Solheim? Are you like...
What, like bunting out the front of my house and stuff?
Yeah, are you just going to sit at home and watch the whole thing? Or are you going anywhere? Are you going down the golf club to watch it? Is there anything going on at your golf club? Is there any kind of social event planned around the Ryder Cup?
So the only social event that I've got around the Ryder Cup is my little sister's actually getting married on the 29th. Which is also my wedding anniversary.
All right, okay. Was that planned to have the same wedding anniversary as you?
Planned by her, not by me. But in terms of the oversight that I made when I got married, we looked ahead in the diary and it was like 29th of September, nothing clashes, there's no events, nothing, but it wasn't a Ryder Cup year. So it wasn't until a year later I was like, My wedding anniversary is literally going to clash pretty much with a Ryder Cup every 2 years.
Every time, yeah. Oh, my God.
I actually remember on our first wedding anniversary, we drove down to, we stayed at Cornwall for the weekend. And I remember coming back on the Sunday, listening to the singles, Ryder Cup singles on the radio, while my wife slept all the way home.
Amazing.
Yeah. I can't come on a golf podcast and so getting married was the biggest mistake of my life. But getting married on the day that I got married was certainly a massive oversight on my part. But we move. We live and learn, don't we?
Poor old Mrs. Holbrook.
I'll watch as much of it as I possibly can. As I usually would. Gives me an excuse to get away from the wedding as well, doesn't it? Get back to watch the golf.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
So we've got all that to look forward to. I can't wait. I'm actually really excited for the Ryder Cup. Really excited.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I absolutely can't wait. I mean, it's it's such an exciting week. The build up to it's amazing. Just that kind of wait that we all have for the announcements of who's going to play that first morning. And I remember, you know, I've been to one Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles, and it was amazing that first morning getting there for first tee off. It was just, we literally were there at 4:30 in the morning in the pitch black, waiting for the sun to come up, really. So it was, it was amazing.
Yeah, it's one thing I'd like to.
It's going to be so cool. I mean, I know a few people that are going across to Marco Simone, and I think the European fans will be out in force. It'd be great to see a big Italian contingent there and supporting all the players. And yeah, I think it's a shame that there's no Italian player in there, but still, I don't think the support's going to wane at all. I think the Americans are in for a tough week, and they're going to get some flack, and rightly so. Can't wait.
Absolutely.
Amazing. But let's turn our attention to Wentworth then. So we obviously know the first round scores, so our picks are going to be slightly biased by that, mate. But who do you think, and obviously Marcus Hellekeld has done exceptionally well to start off with, but is there anyone you think's really going to jump out the pack?
I always look at Tyrrell Hatton around Wentworth.
Okay.
I think if he's on it, I mean, look, when he wins big events. And obviously there's none bigger on the European tour than Wentworth. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw, you know, I could see a steady week for Tyrrell Hatton. I wouldn't be surprised if he's right in the mix at the end.
Our man Victor's in there again, 3 under par, not far away. Someone who is literally hitting form, well, certainly the last 3 weeks, Connor Syme has been amazing. I mean, shot 5 under again today, tied for fourth, right up there. Moronk, as we've already mentioned, doing great. Åberg at 4 under. He actually had 7 birdies today, Åberg.
Yeah.
So he's obviously playing quite well, but making a few mistakes out there. Lowry's started pretty well, same as Hovland. Fleetwood's there as well. So, yeah, I mean, out of those guys there that we can see that have already started pretty hot, Fitzpatrick's got to be... probably got to be favourite at the minute, maybe. I don't know. I've not even looked at the betting, but him, like you say, Hatton's got to be in with a shout as well. But, Rory needs to put his foot on the gas tomorrow. He needs a quick sort of 6 or 7 under tomorrow or something. And Rahm as well. I mean, 1 under for him, he'll be disappointed with that, I'd imagine. So,
He's not been playing very well, has he? By his own standards.
No. I mean, he's obviously... still playing fairly decent, isn't he? But yeah, not by his standards, as you say. He's probably not, no. Maybe he's just waiting to peak next week. I mean,
hopefully.
Yeah, it would be in 2 weeks' time, it would be a good week to do that. So, yeah, Rose 72. Yeah, again, same as McIlroy. Okay, nothing special. But yeah, where did you say that Højgaard had a bit of a shocker?
I just caught the last bit of coverage because what have I been doing? Oh, I've been at work today. Think about that. And I just saw him. I saw him literally carve one into the
trees on the par. 120 feet high. So.
And two double bogeys. One of them, I think he hit it out of bounds right on the 18th.
Yeah,
not special.
Okay, fair enough. Well, get all his bad shots out the way this week.
Yeah, but I also think it is a course, you know, like you look at the 17th and the 18th as par 5 finishes and you think, oh, that'll be easy pickups. But, you know, the 17th is not easy. It's, you know, it's that fairway, the way that fairway cambers from left to right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very tough.
You know, more often than not, players are hitting out of the right hand rough there, and then, you know, your second shot up is blind, and even if you've hit the fairway, you've got to hit a big one right to left off a hanging lie. It's not an easy hole, and then, you know, the 18th, more often than not, as long as you keep it in play, you're going to have a go in two. And you know, I saw Tyrrell Hatton hit it in the water. I saw who else did I see hit it in the water? Someone else. So yeah, it looks easy on paper. You just think, oh, par 5 finish, but not always easy.
No, I mean, Marcus had four birdies up to the 16th and then bogeyed 17 from nowhere, really. Missed the green left and didn't get it up and down, and then managed to hole like a 8-9 footer at the last for a par as well to avoid dropping another one. So, yeah, like you say, it's not an easy finish at all. And you think these guys are licking their lips at par fives, like you say, but these two still demand, well, if you're going to get on in two very good shots, and even in three very good shots, don't they? So, yeah, very good. And by all accounts, the guys I spoke to that had been down there at the Pro-Am said the greens were very, very quick as well. So,
yeah. They normally are, yeah.
In the hole there too. So, yeah, all good. But, yeah, I mean, it all kind of shapes up for a very nice week, doesn't it? And one that we're kind of looking forward to watching, certainly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Talk to us about your golf this week then, Matt. So you went up to the northeast, right? So
I did.
For those of you listening that haven't visited this area of the country, tell us exactly where you've been and which golf courses you've played, and what was your verdict on each of them as well. I mean, I've been up to this area, not played a huge amount of golf up there, more inland than out on the coast, to be honest, but they're certainly on my list of golf courses to play. So, yeah, fill us in on what you're up to.
I will. Before I do that, right, I just wanted to mention one thing, because it was brought to my attention by a listener who sent me a message, Ant Kerwin, who's a course manager at Romford, asked us to mention, and I know we're a bit late, but he reminded us about Thank a Greenkeeper Day, which was Tuesday this week. So even though it's past, I did want to go on the podcast and say, you know, any greenkeepers, course managers out there that are listening, thanks for all the hard work that you do. And I apologize on behalf of all the golfers that do not repair pitch marks or rake bunkers, and generally just don't look after the course, because many of us really appreciate everything you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the guys at our place work extremely hard to get the course the way it is, and it generally is in very, very good condition, and certainly now is probably in the best nick it's been in all year, really. And yeah, like you say, the occasional, well, I can't say the words, but
you know who they are.
GCWs.
Yeah.
Do yeah. Stuff like that.
So my trip. Okay, so we went up to the northeast. Now, the northeast for me is not a place, not a part of the country that I've visited before. It's not really been on the radar. I know of courses like Gosick and Seton Carew up that direction, but in terms of the other courses that we played, and I'll talk you through them in a second, hadn't really been on the radar. For me personally, if I've travelled that far up the country, which, I mean, for me, it's a good 5 hours, I generally would go past and head to Scotland, right? Because it's Scotland. So the first thing I'd say is actually from the Far East, as we are down here, the journey, I said it was 5 hours. But it's just a straight drive up the A1, which is an absolute dream. And to be honest, when I was looking at it on the map, and when you look at it geographically, I actually thought it was going to take maybe 6.5-7 hours to get there. So 5 hours really isn't, you know, that desperate for us in terms of a travel. So it wasn't a trip that I organized, right? It was just a trip that I was part of. And we basically played four courses in 3 days, right? So we traveled up on Sunday morning.
Yep.
And we headed straight to a place called Dunstanborough Castle.
Okay.
So Dunstanborough Castle is it's a links course. It's on the, you know, it's right on the coast. You see a lot of sea, you see a lot of the beach, and also the remains of Dunstanborough Castle, funnily enough, yep. Also sits on as a backdrop as you go around a lot of the courses. Anyone follows me on Instagram or Twitter, check out some of the posts that I've made, because I shared a lot of photos over the three days. So Dunstanborough Castle was great, right? So it's one of these, like, it's a full 18 hole course, And in fact, the day after we was there, they had a big kind of like Northeast region pro-am there. So when we played it, there was tee markers and tee signage around all the tees, which was a nice touch. And as you drive down this little kind of single road dead end lane, you pull into the car park, and the car park's quite small. But when we got there, the place was absolutely heaving, right? And it's very old school and old fashioned in the sense that you've got this one kind of tiny building, which is like the main bar area is the biggest room, if you like, and the pro shop is in the bar. And the bar is the restaurant, and the bar is also a local cafe where a lot of walkers and, you know, families stop that are walking down to the beach. There's a footpath through the golf course.
Fair enough.
So this place was absolutely buzzing with people having afternoon tea, people having, you know, drinks after been walking. Plus, there was a big group of golfers that have obviously had a competition on the Sunday morning. And then there was us and another group that was visiting. And a really, really nice golf course. I felt you've got like opening six, and then you come back to the clubhouse, and then it was the rest of the holes as you play out towards the castle down the coast. Were absolutely fantastic. Like in terms of some of the sceneries and some of the views, it was you know, bob on. We was unfortunate with the weather that it rained quite heavily in the afternoon, so we actually stopped in the bar for about an hour and a half and managed to get back out. And yeah, like the signature holes is par three. It's like 90 yards from the white tee. And it plays over this ravine. And it kind of sits in front of the hill where the castle sits on. It's just really picturesque. It's, you know, a really, really nice place.
Cool.
Yeah. And then what we did is, on Monday morning, we went and played a place called Almouth Village Links, okay. Or Almouth Village Golf Club, right? Which is technically it's the oldest nine hole links course in England.
Okay.
So it opened in like 1869, and again, very traditional. It gave me kind of Prestwicky vibes because Almouth Village is quite small, quite quaint. And they've basically got like this, there's a piece of land between some cliffs and the sea, and they've just got they've literally just sandwiched nine holes in there. So the first and the 18th almost plays as a double fairway. The second and the 8th almost plays as a double fairway. So it feels quite tight, but there's a little bit of room, but you've got to be quite conscious of the fact that you've got golfers playing towards you, a fair bit. But again, like the tiny little clubhouse, the other side of this tiny little road, very peaceful, very quiet.
Looked like you got some good weather as well while you were there.
It was fantastic. The weather for the second and third day was absolutely fantastic. But
yeah, I messaged you on Tuesday and it was literally torrential. Yeah,
it was brilliant. Yeah, it was really good. So we did this, we was basically, because there was eight of us, we had two teams and we was doing match play all off scratch. But on the nine, we decided to go in our teams and play a Texas scramble. So that was quite fun to mix it up as well. But there's one point where you go out seven holes. And then you play up. There's one hole where you play up this kind of cliff edge that's blind off the tee. And then as you're up there, the next hole you tee off on top of the cliffs, down back onto the fairway before you play kind of 7, 8, 9, I think, or 8 or 9, what it was as you're going back towards the village. And look, you know, raw, rugged, but very well kept. Greens were great. But again, you know, like tiny little car park, tiny little putting green. You know, the bar and the restaurant, the pro shop, I don't think I was open until 10 o'clock. You know, just really, it's almost like you could tell that that's how golf was played, you know, like hundreds of years ago. And I love that kind of place because it's just different to what we're used to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it was a massive contrast, right? So we went from there to Gozick, which is the number one course in the Northeast. It's probably the one that's most well known. It's been a host of regional qualifying for the Open, and it gives you a completely different test, right? It's a championship golf course, so the setup there is, you know, is proper. You've got a nice grass driving range. You've got, you know, the course is manicured in the sense that, you know, the greens and the tee boxes are nice and flat, but yet the fairways are still quite raw, rugged, linksy style. Massive greens, which I like because that suits my game, which is why I played well there. But quite traditional, so you kind of go out. It reminded me a little bit of Western Gales because, again, you have to drive in, you go over the train track. The car park is like one long kind of single file car park, if you like. Very, very quiet, very quaint. And yeah, so you kind of play out towards the, you don't see as much as the sea there. You're about probably 400 or 500 yards inland, and there's some really massive sand dunes that kind of protect you from the sea. But you play up to the top, and then you kind of play 3 or 4 holes. I don't know the direction, but left, if you like, from where the clubhouse is. Then you come down and play almost 9, 10, 11 holes or something like that, all in one direction, before you then turn back and come back. And the 18th is a nice drivable par 4 as you play back down towards the clubhouse. I was actually chatting to the market manager there, who was showing me some of the plans that they've got to make some changes to the course, which would be brilliant as well. But it was a really good experience, you know, like a proper good linksy test and some incredible par 3s. A couple of blind shots, which I don't mind. I can't speak highly enough. It's a completely different experience to the days before in terms of the views, but you appreciate the test for a championship golf course. You know, it's a lot of thinking off the tee in terms, you know, you can't just stand there and wallop a driver everywhere, because you know, if you go in bunkers, as I found out, it leads to bad things.
Well, generally,
I missed the first fairway and I missed the second green, and then on the front nine I didn't miss a fairway or a green. It was probably the best I'd hit the ball tee to green for a long time, and I made eight consecutive fours, and then I parred the par 3 ninth hole, so I was one under gross on the front nine. We played it from the white tees. But it's just, you know, it's every so often you've got the trains going past, but that's pretty much all you can hear. You're not close enough to hear the sea. You hear the trains. It was relatively quiet because we played it on a Monday afternoon. The food is incredible. They've got on the menu golfer's salad. Do you want to know what that consists of?
Go for it.
Pie, chips, and beans.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which we thought was great. You know, lovely working in the pro shop. Everything about the place is really, really good. Cool. Some big undulating greens. I absolutely loved it. And then
I've always found that area of the country to be a very, very friendly place to go. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's really nice, very accommodating, quite touristy, and like you say, pretty picturesque around there as well. I mean, I've been up there and stayed sort of on the coast there. Like Anik kind of way, and it's great, absolutely lovely.
Yeah. And then Tuesday morning before we came home, we went to play a place called Bamborough Castle.
Yep.
Not to be confused with Dunstanborough Castle, which everybody was. But Bamborough Castle basically sits outside the town a little bit. So you've got this really, where at Dunstanborough Castle, the castle, it looked like remains of a castle. Bamborough Castle still very much intact, very grand. It's the absolute centrepiece of the town of Bamborough. And we actually looked, I think that castle dated back to like the year 500 or something. Like, Jesus. Incredible history, yeah. So this was more a clifftop golf course, because right at the end of the town, again, you drive down a single lane road, which is a dead end because it only leads you into the golf club. And this was a very much more, more old school, traditional layout, in the sense that it was a par 68, 5,600 yards, but lots of quirky holes. So the condition is not as incredible as somewhere like Gosick is, for example. But I'm struggling to think of a golf course that gave me as many 360-degree panoramic views.
Yeah.
Of the sea, the castle, almost on every hole. This is, of course, probably where I took most photos. It helps that the sun was shining. It helps that I was wearing an incredible baby blue jumper for the first time.
It does make me laugh when you put all the shirt rubbish on
there. People, listen, it's for the fans. The fans love it.
Tomorrow. The fans piss off.
The fans love it. It was, you know, like the first hole.
That and nobody else, let me tell you.
What's that?
It's your mum that comments on that. Nobody else.
Sometimes I get sometimes 50, 60 votes, which is quite a lot for Instagram, I think. Anyway, back to Bramborough. So like the first hole, for example, you tee off right in front of the clubhouse and it's a par three, 170, 180 yards. But there's a dip in the cliff, like a ravine that you're playing over. The wind's pumping in, so you have to hit it almost over the ravine to let it drift back on. And then you just start getting higher and higher. And there's this section of the course, I think, 15 and 8T or 15 and 6T, something like that kind of sit right at the top. And it's quite strange because you see at the start, you see the coastline. So you can see the sea and a lovely beach. But then as you carry on around the course, you can see almost blind to you as you go. Like you don't even know it's there. There's like this estuary section where as we was playing it, the tide came in into the estuary and we could see like there was like sandy dunes, like someone had buried loads of bananas in a row, for example. Like and as we was going around, the tide was coming in and covered it. And it was just a great spectacle to witness that. Look, I can imagine if you went in November, it was, you know, hammering down and freezing cold, wind off the sea. It might not be as fun, but, you know, we certainly called it on the best day. And there's some, you know, really quirky, fun holes. A lot more blind shots here. So I know people, if, you know, some people don't necessarily like those sort of things. I generally don't mind it. But it's definitely a course if you're not too mobile, then I would recommend a buggy because it was quite a demanding walk. But it's just so much fun. It's difficult to, I've actually, so for Gosick and Bamborough, I've actually updated some features on Golf Shake, which will go live hopefully some point, I say this week, but tomorrow's Friday. So there'll be about, to kind of give you an idea, and as I say, like I took about 200 photos at Bamborough Castle, and I still don't think it does the place justice. Absolutely fantastic, and that course was packed. It was, you know, heaving with visitors and members. I can't. And then, you know, just to wrap up those, you know, those kind of four courses in 3 days as an area, there's it does remind me a little bit of when we go to Ayrshire and Dardon Links, in the sense that, you know, you can base yourself somewhere and there's maybe 5 or 6 other courses that, you know, we've not looked at, that we haven't played, but you drive past. So it's definitely an area that kind of is on my radar now. You know, when people come to me and ask me, you know, oh, I'm thinking of going away, where do you think I should go? Like, it's just another place that I can recommend to people and kind of have a bit more of a knowledgeable conversation about what's on offer up there. You know, and I urge other people, if they're thinking about looking to go somewhere, you know, just have a look at it. I'm not saying head there. I'm saying have a look at it because, you know, there's a lot going for golf in the Northeast, and it's definitely, as I say, it's on my radar now, and it should be on other people's radars. I loved it, and everybody loved it. Everyone that was there had such a good time.
When are you going back?
Well, this is the thing, you know, every time I go somewhere nice, like, oh yeah, I can't wait to go back, but, you know, then somewhere else comes calling, and that's the beauty of this game. There's always somewhere else to go, I mean, look, Gosick won't mind me letting people know that, you know, they do have some plans to make a fair few changes to the front line of the golf course in particular. Okay. So they've been on the open rotor and they wanted to wait until they've come off the open for regional, until they make these changes, and I think when they do that, it will be a much better golf course as well. So
you can actually see quite a lot of the course when you drive up the A1, can't you? It's just literally on the side of the road there, isn't it? Yeah, when you're driving up, you can literally see over to the trees.
I think you can,
I remember every time I drive to Scotland, I kind of go past it and think it just looks really good. Really want to go there.
Yeah, it's a super impressive place. It really is. So look, but they, They expect those changes to be finished by 2025, which sounds like a million miles away, but it's 18 months away. You know, maybe in 2 years' time, as we sit here now, in 2 years' time, the changes might be complete, and I'm sure we'll go back up and have a look at it again. But yeah, it's brilliant. As I say, it's absolutely brilliant. Like I'm sitting here now. I'm just trying to think of, you know, all the courses. It's just so good.
Sounds like so good. I can't wait to try it myself, to be honest. And
yeah,
particularly after some of these changes are done to Gosic, it'd be pretty good. But
yeah, no, I have. And then now, as I say, now I've got this got this 36 old comp tomorrow at Hunstanton, and the weather looks great. And but this is my last one of the year until the winter four balls kick in again at Felixstowe in literally like 3 weeks' time, which is a sad thing to think about. But
no.
Yeah, I'm going to go and have a good day tomorrow. I'll tell you now, because I'm sure that we'll record another podcast on Monday.
Yes, indeed.
I'll tell you now, I don't care what I shoot tomorrow. Just want to go and have a good time. I could finish rock bottom. Just want to have a nice time.
I think if you go there with that attitude that you just want to enjoy yourself, you probably will play better than you think you will. So, yeah, good luck, mate. Enjoy.
Thanks. So you got anything going on?
I've had a busy week, mate, to be honest. This last 2 months has been crazy. I've not really played as much golf as I want to, although I did play in a pro-am last Friday at Wakefield Golf Club, which was nice. We got a lovely day. The course was okay. It was just one of those rounds when I didn't really do anything wrong, but didn't do anything right either. It was kind of a bit, I don't know, boring one. I shot two over and played pretty average, really. Didn't really do a lot, but... yeah, it was a nice day. Played with some really nice guys and team did okay. But yeah, it was, I think I picked up a couple of quid, but it was nothing major. But
For a two?
No.
when you play in the pro-ams, do you generally pick your team, or do you just get kind of handed some amateurs?
Generally, it'll be just, you know, either some guys will ask me to play. So in this instance, it was a guy who I know who's a member at Wakefield asked me if I'd play with him, and he played with his dad and another chap who are both members at Howley, incidentally. So yeah, it was kind of quite a nice group. But it's generally people sort of saying, do you want to play in this pro-am, and or I'll ask a few guys if they want to play. I've got a probably group of about seven or eight guys that I know are up for playing pretty much anywhere and anytime, and because it's obviously not cheap to play in pro-ams either. You're talking, you know, 70-80 quid to play in a pro-am these days. And certainly one we have here, which is over 2 days at Ganton and Fulford, you're talking pretty much 200 quid to play for 2 days. So it's not cheap, and you know, that is out of some people's price range, and I completely get that. But you do get a really good experience. You know, we went to Wakefield, we had a sandwich before we went out, played 18 holes of golf, had a meal when we got in. There's prizes, all that kind of stuff, and that obviously comes at a cost, doesn't it? And you know, when you break it down that way, sort of 60, 70, 80 quid doesn't seem as much, does it? I mean, you're getting quite a decent experience for your money. But no, it was good. But no, really, this time of year, I'm kind of getting ready for 2024 already. So I've had Adidas and Wilson in this week showing me what they've got for next year. Very good, particularly the Adidas footwear looks awesome for next year and way better than it has done for a long time. I've struggled a bit with footwear in the last 12 months, and it's with every brand as well, not just Adidas. And I think if I spoke to lots of other PGA pros, they'd probably tell you the same thing. It's not been a good year for footwear. And sometimes you get that, you know, some years you don't sell many bags, some years you don't sell much clothing. And this year, for some reason, for everyone's been a bad one for footwear. I know a couple of brands are struggling with overstocking footwear and trying to get rid of it. And you might see some stuff coming onto the market that's, you know, silly cheap over the Christmas period maybe, but hopefully that doesn't dilute the sales next year, because like I say, what I've seen from the brands so far. So at the minute I've seen Nike, I've seen Adidas, I've seen Puma, and Travis Matthew clothing wise and footwear wise. And it all looks very, very good. Like I say, particularly the footwear, Adidas, the new Nike footwear is brilliant as well for next year. It looks great. And Travis Matthews footwear for next year looks pretty good too. like I say, on the club front, Wilson's the first hardware brand really that's sort of shown us what's coming for next year. No surprise, they're keeping Dynapower because it's been so popular and it is just brilliant. They've recently just come out top in the My Golf Spy Most Wanted Fairway Wood, and rightly so. I mean, we did the review earlier on this year and it's just a fantastic fairway wood, that Dynapower fairway wood. The driver's great, the hybrid's great, the irons have been really good. They've got a new set of irons to complement that family that's coming out next year, a forged version. I'm pretty sure I can tell you this because I'm not showing you any pictures or anything. But they've sort of revamped the staff model iron range as well, which looks pretty good. The Infinite Putter series that they do, which is kind of a lower price point. I think they normally sell for about between 100 and 130 quid for a putter. And they are seriously good quality for that money as well. They're absolutely brilliant. And golf ball. I know you've used the staff model ball this week, haven't you?
I have.
On your social media. The staff model ball is brilliant. I don't know what you thought of it when you tried it, but I tried it earlier this year. We went to Birkdale for a Wilson kind of launch day, if you like, and played with it all the way around there in the wind, and it was absolutely fantastic. What did you find?
So I'd actually used, I don't know if you remember years ago, I'd used the FG Tour ball.
Okay.
So I was keen to give this one a go. Really, really good, actually, to be fair. For me, golf balls is all about short game because that's my area of strength. So I like to feel comfortable chipping and putting with it. But it was it performs, you know, as I would expect a premium ball to. I definitely didn't think, oh, I don't like this for whatever reason. And I can also confirm it makes a lovely splash if you hit one into the sea.
Okay, cool. I mean,
I didn't really hit it into the sea, by the way.
Not only realigned the ball kind of category that they've got. I mean, I've stocked the ball for a few years now. So Staff Model is their top ball. There's an X version of Staff Model coming out. Triad is the next price point down, and then Duo Soft is the one below that. So I stock all three of these, right? So one of the things that's kind of stopped me selling as much of Staff Model is the price, because it's right up there at the same price as the number one ball in golf, which is 48 quid a dozen, which is expensive, right? And some of the other brands, the kind of Callaways and TaylorMade of this world, Strixons, who sell a lot of golf balls, have kind of brought their price points closer to the 40 quid mark. And I think that's why they're doing quite well and stealing some market share from Titleist as well. But that's getting realigned for next year. So the Staff Model ball is going to retail at around 40 quid, the Triad ball around 30 quid, and then the Duo Soft at 20 quid. So they've got quite a nice kind of jump in that. And I think that Triad golf ball for what will be $29.99 is pretty much blows everything else out of the water at that price, really. I don't know if you've tried that golf ball, but it is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I don't think I have tried that one, to be honest.
So I'd expect quite a strong year from Wilson for me next year, because we already do really well with it. It's a fantastic product. It performs really well. And let me tell you, when I'm doing driver fittings and fairway wood fittings, when it stacks up against anything that you're paying a lot more money for out there on the market, and that, you know, there's no upcharges on most of the shafts, and their irons speak for themselves. You know, they've still got the record for winning the most majors in the iron category. So they're brilliant. And the new Staff Model irons are lovely. We hit a few of them in the net. We've got a new wedge as well, which looks fantastic. But yeah, I mean, it just looks like an improvement, and I'm glad that they've kept Dynapower because it's been so good. But we're kind of getting into the season now where we're going to start seeing new clubs from the likes of Callaway, TaylorMade, Cobra. I know, are you going fairly soon to the Cobra launch? Is it in Spain? Is it
over? I am. I've been invited back.
I know what that's called. I've not seen it, but obviously we can't talk about that. It's embargoed till next year.
Don't shoot me.
But it sounds good. It's a very American sounding name again, but I don't think that's a bad thing. But it's I'm sure we're going to see some fantastic stuff from all the manufacturers like we do at this time of year. And there's always going to be it's just marketing kind of comments coming out all the time. And do you know what? A lot of the time it is, but I'd like to think that we're honest enough on this podcast and at Golf Shake when we do our reviews that if it's not better, we will tell you. Do you know what I mean? It's but yeah, it's just a busy time of year. Golf at the club is starting to wind down a little bit and kind of quieten down. So that's a good thing for me because the last couple of months have just been very hectic. But yeah, looking forward to it. I'm going to the Belfry next Thursday to be fitted for my new Callaway irons, so I'm buzzing about that. And then I've got a trip at the end of October, early November, to Dallas, Texas, with Callaway as well to see some new stuff. So should be pretty good.
Well, I've got 24 days till the big one.
What's the big one?
The Pinder.
Right. This is another topic completely, right? So I already must have forgot about this, man. I'm glad you brought it up. So I'm sure
I wasn't gonna
leave. I'm sure Mr. Lockwood won't be happy. But those of you that are regular listeners know that we're keeping track of Matt Lockwood's progress qualifying for the Pinder Trophy at the end of the season, which I believe is for people who've won medal comps, is it, throughout the year at your club? Well,
yeah. Any comps, medals, stablefords, whether it's board competitions, anyone that's won anything.
So every man and his dog's in it, basically, apart from him at the minute. Yeah.
At the moment, it seems that way.
Tell us then, is he in?
So there was a midweek Stableford yesterday.
Yeah.
And I can confirm that out of the 14 entrants in Division 14? 1. 14 entrants in Division 1.
Okay.
So he didn't win. He came 12 out of 14.
Oh dear, Matt. Oh dear.
But it was quite funny because I texted him. So he'd been away for a couple of weeks. I texted him when I was away saying, you know, just give him the eye emoji and like midweek Stableford. And he was like, might be. And I think before he'd already teed off, he'd sent me a screenshot of the leaderboard where a guy had already put 41 points in.
Oh, nice. Lovely.
And look, Matt off 1.2 or whatever it is. I'm not sure if he gets one or two shots. That's, you know, for him to go.
He's got to go low. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got to go low. And I've not seen anything in his game recently to suggest that he's going low. look, he's got more. There's more coming up. So you just never know.
Fingers crossed for you, Mr. Lockwood.
I've got everything crossed for him.
Yeah, me too. Matt, we've run out of time. It's been long today. We've talked about a lot, to be honest. I didn't think we'd get anywhere near this amount of time, but no, it's been pretty good. Next week, we're going to obviously talk about who's won at Wentworth and also a bit of a run-up to the Solheim, and we're probably going to talk about the Ryder Cup. But we can be forgiven for that. We're excited. Okay. So until next time, thank you very much for listening. Keep watching all our content on the YouTube channel and also on the website. And if you want to get in contact with us, you can do at info@golfshake.com and we'll do all we can to help you play more and play better. Speak to you next week. Bye.